Okay, well, welcome everyone. Thank you for inviting me. And I guess we'll just jump right into it. The talk tonight, or the session tonight, is based around, as it really always is, the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Buddha's teaching on the four foundations of mindfulness. In this sutta, the Buddha said, "Ekayano ayam bhikkhave maggo." This, O monks, O you, O bhikkhus, no? And bhikkhu could mean anyone who realizes the importance of practicing meditation. O you who see the importance of mental training, importance of mindfulness, who see the danger in being negligent. Ekayano ayam maggo. This path is the one way. This is how the Buddha started his discourse. And so I think it's important to understand what we mean by the one way, because this is the very beginning of the discourse. It's a very important part. It's a very bold claim. And unfortunately, I think it hits many people the wrong way, because it's a claim made by all religious doctrines. We claim to have the only way. And so I want to clarify this a little bit. That really, this isn't saying that Buddhism or the Buddha's idea is the only idea that's right. Because the path that the Buddha talks about is the path of being mindful. And what this really means is by paying attention, and by paying proper attention. And so I think it should be quite agreeable to us all to think that if you don't pay proper attention, you can never really come to understand reality. Now, the Buddha's teaching rests on the theory that understanding reality is enough to bring about freedom from suffering. So if we have an argument with this, then we might think this is not the right way. But if we can at least appreciate the theory that understanding reality is the way to find true peace and happiness, then we really shouldn't have a problem with the idea that examining reality and looking at reality is the only way. Because if you don't look, you'll never see. So the teaching here is to really to come to understand reality. And the Buddha said this is the only way to five goals. There are five things that this path leads to. It's the only way. It's the way that leads only to these things. It can't lead you away from them. It's the way of the one. Well, it's the way that was taught only by the Buddha, for example. There are many meanings of the word only way. So the five things that the Buddha said this path leads to, are number one, it leads to purity. Number two, it leads to a mental health. Number three, it leads to freedom from suffering. Number four, it leads you to the right way of living, the right way or the right path. And number five, it leads you to the goal, which is nibbana or release. So I'd just like to take a little bit of time, very short time here, to explain what these five mean, and then we'll jump right into the meditation. So the first one is that it leads to the purification of beings, and here specifically the purification of our minds. Because when you see things as they are, the theory goes, and it's not really theory, it's actually practice, and what you can see from yourself through the meditation practice is that once you come to see things as they are, you'll never become defiled in the mind. It really should make perfect sense to us. When you see things as they are, you'll never do something that would cause you suffering. If you say, "I don't want to suffer," then the only reason why you could do something that leads you to suffer is because you don't understand what you're doing. You don't understand the nature of the act, the nature of the experience, and you aren't clearly aware and interacting with the experience in a way that leads to your own happiness and well-being. So as we look and explore and come to understand our moment-to-moment interactions with reality, our minds will naturally give rise only to those states of mind that lead to our happiness, because we will realize that the states that lead to unhappiness are of that type. That the states which defile the mind, they lead us to unhappiness. We'll realize this is not a good way to behave. This is really the most important point, because once your mind is pure, then all the other benefits come. But to understand what benefits come from purifying the mind, we have these other four results. The second one is that you have great mental health. You don't have mental sicknesses like depression or anxiety. And I use the word mental sickness loosely. It just means anything, any kind of discomfort in the mind. If you feel a person who is stressed or worried or depressed, or a person who is mourning the loss of a loved one or some sort of loss, a person who is angry by nature, or addictions, people who are addicted to this or addicted to anything, it allows you to uproot these because your mind is not giving rise to the unwholesome mind states that develop into habits. So it's also able to root out all of our bad habits of mind, sometimes ones we think are a part of who we are and are incurable. People who are depressed think it's a part of who they are. People who are stressed think it's a part of who they are. But when you meditate, when you look carefully, you see that actually you're perpetuating it. And all you have to do is to give up and change your way of looking at things. Come to see things objectively. And then every experience will be a creation of a wholesome tendency and will counteract and eventually overcome the bad habits. The third benefit is it will help us to overcome suffering. So this doesn't necessarily mean we will have no suffering, because until we reach Nibbana, we will always have some kind of suffering. But the Buddha split suffering up into two parts, physical suffering and mental suffering. So we get rid of these one by one. The first one actually we get rid of is the mental suffering. Because physical suffering is something that as long as you have a body, you'll have to deal with. But we have to understand that this doesn't mean we have to suffer in the mind. A person can be in pain and still actually be quite at peace with themselves. They may not be happy, but they won't be upset either. In fact, it's possible for a person to be quite happy even when the body is in physical pain. This is because of our understanding of the experience as being simply a feeling, of seeing it simply for what it is, and not giving rise to any partiality. Because normally when we experience things, we will judge it. And the reason why we are uncomfortable when pain arises is because we're partial against it. We have this partiality in our mind. We don't like it. Now, if we're able to give up that disliking, then we'll never have to worry about pain again. This is hopefully what you're going to see when we start to practice. The fourth benefit is that it helps you to attain the right path. Again, we come across this idea of the right path, but what this means is the right way of living your life, whatever that may be, whatever your life may be. It doesn't mean that you have to become a monk or leave your home or your family, but it means that when you live your life, you will start to do things and respond and react and interact with the world in a much more wholesome way. You'll find yourself doing the right thing and saying the right thing and helping other people much more than before. You find yourself less selfish. You find yourself suffering a lot less and living a life that is to your own benefit and for the benefit of others around you, simply because you see things clearly. Of course, wisdom is a wonderful thing, no? It helps you in all situations. Any problems that arise, you're able to see clearly what is the way to resolve them, and so on. And the fifth benefit is that it allows us to find true freedom of mind. That it leads us to a state where there are no defilements, where there is no suffering. Ultimately leads us to total freedom from any arisen suffering, which we call Nibbana. So these are the benefits of what we're going to do. Now what is this path? This is the selling, no? Here we have the marketing. The Buddha was a very good marketer in this sutta. He got everyone's attention by saying how great this would be. At first it was the only path, and then it leads to these great things. But then the question is, well, what is it? So many of you might already know this is the four foundations of mindfulness. And before we continue, I'd like to have everyone remember these four. If you can remember them with me, I'd like to have everyone, if possible, recite these out loud. So ask you all to repeat after me. I'll say them one by one and then you repeat them. Body, feelings, mind, Dhamma. Body, feelings, mind, Dhamma. Body, feelings, mind, Dhamma. Now can you say it? Again? One more time. Okay, so this is the way we teach in Buddhist culture. And I think it's a good way to teach because it may seem kind of silly to just be repeating words, but now you have them in your mind. Now you can always remember back, what are the four foundations of mindfulness? And really, my teacher would always say this is a very important... it's not something we should take lightly because here we have really the Ekayana Magga. We have memorized it now. The core of the Buddha's path, you know, the path that the Buddha taught, we haven't memorized. Quite easy, actually. You don't have to go memorizing the whole Tipitaka. So do try to keep these in mind. Now, I've left one untranslated, and I'll explain what that is. The body refers to our entire physical form, from the bottoms of our feet to the top of our head. This is body. Our awareness of it is called mindfulness of the body. So when we walk, being aware of the sensation of the body moving, when we sit, being aware of the pressure against the floor and of our one leg touching the other and our hands touching our legs, the stiffness in the back, the stiffness in the stomach when it rises and when it falls, and so on. The feeling of our tongue against the roof of our mouth, all of these things are physical experiences. And this is what we're going to use to... This is the first thing we're going to use to learn about who we are and what is reality. Because, of course, the physical is a very important part of reality. The feelings, number two, refers to basic feelings. Not talking about emotions yet, but talking about our impression or our experience of the physical. Maybe it's pleasure, maybe it's pain, or maybe it's just a neutral sensation. So these are the three types of feeling. We have happy feelings, unhappy feelings, and neutral, or pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feelings. Sometimes you'll be, when you're sitting, you'll feel pain in the back. Sometimes you'll be sitting and you feel pleasure or happiness. Sometimes you'll be sitting and you'll feel calm. So we'll come to see how these change, and we'll come to learn to view them objectively, and not become attached to the happy feelings or upset about the unpleasant ones. As we'll see, that they're not under our control, and it's useless to become upset about them. It's useless to become attached to them as well. The third is the mind. The mind is that which thinks. Sometimes we're focused, sometimes we're unfocused. The mind is all these thoughts that are swirling around inside of us. You'll be sitting here listening to me, but suddenly your mind wanders, thinking about your home, thinking about your family, and so on, thinking about work. Number four is the Dhamma. And here, Dhamma, we're going to make it easy and just say it's the teaching of the Buddha. But the Dhamma here, the Buddha said, okay, so once you focus on these other three, then you start to see the Dhamma, you start to see the truth, or you start to see the Buddha's teaching. The first thing that you'll see, unfortunately, is that what the Buddha taught are bad things, right? Because our mind generally is not very well-trained. So we have a lot of bad things, and these are Dhammas. The Buddha said this is a teaching that the Buddha gave on those things which are bad for us. Bad for us means just in an objective way. They're not immoral, or they may be, but the point is not that they are immoral. The point is that they cause harm to our mind. They cause our minds to be unfocused, to be unsteady, and unclear, unhappy as well. So these we have to remember. This is under the teaching of the Buddha, the Dhamma. The first group is called the Niwarana. These are the bad things, the hindrances. Good name for them is the hindrances. And so you have to remember these as well. If I can ask everyone to repeat after me with these, because these are also very important to keep in mind when you meditate. So I'll say them one by one, and then you repeat after me. I'm going to give them very simple names. For those of you who already know them, you might know them by more difficult names. Liking, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, doubt. Liking, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, and doubt. Okay, so these are the five hindrances. You have to keep these in mind. You're liking something, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, doubt. This is what we mean by the four foundations of mindfulness. This is going to be our path and our practice during the time that we meditate. So now I've gone even a little over time. I'd like to jump right into the meditation. Ask everyone to begin to put these into practice, and I'll lead you through it. So please get comfortable in a meditation position, and let's see how are we going to learn to put these into practice. I'll go through them one by one. First of all, the body. Now remember, this is all how we experience things, so it's not thinking about our body and our shape and how we look from the outside or something. We're talking in terms of our experience of the body. And when you're sitting still, your experience of the body is only a few different things. You may at certain times become aware of the position that you're sitting in. As I said, the pressure in the back, the pressure against the floor, and so on. But what is most likely to be obvious, and what was always recommended by the Buddha and by many meditation teachers, was the breath. The breath is always there. Even when you're asleep, you're still breathing. And so we can become aware of the sensation of that the breath makes when it enters the body. You can be aware at the tip of the nose there's a sensation. You can be aware in the chest there's a sensation. In this tradition, we focus on the breath as it changes the feeling in the stomach. It creates a sensation in our abdomen. So the abdomen rises. This is the mindfulness of the breath, to be aware of the breath in the abdomen. When it rises, we'll say to ourselves, rising. And when it falls, we'll say to ourselves, falling. Rising. Falling. We're just going to use this word. The word is a mantra. And the mantra here is not some mystical or magical thing. But this mantra is focused on just the name or the recognition of what is going on. What is this that we're experiencing? When you experience the stomach rising, you recognize that's rising. What we're trying to do is create an objective state of mind. Because by just watching it, our mind is full of all sorts of subjective states, liking it or disliking it, judging it or thinking about it. But when we remind ourselves what's really going on, we're able to see it as just that. Instead of saying, this is good, this is bad, we say, this is rising. And we close the loop so there's no room for the extrapolation, for us to make more out of it than it actually is. When the stomach falls, we say to ourselves, this is falling. Rising. Falling. This is about the simplest meditation technique one could ever give. So I'd like to have everyone try this now. Just say it silently. This isn't out loud. Now you're just saying the words in your stomach, actually. Your mind is in your stomach, and that's where you're repeating this. When it rises, you recognize rising. When it falls, you recognize falling. Remind yourself, this is rising, this is falling. Now the first thing you should realize as you start to do this is there's a lot more than just the rising going on. The body may be fairly still, but the mind most likely isn't. And so you can hopefully appreciate why there is not just the rising as the one object. Because sometimes there are other things that take our awareness away. And either we can push them away, or we can accept them and include them in our understanding of reality. This is what the Buddha taught. This is why he taught four foundations of mindfulness. So the second one, the feelings, if and when you feel happy or calm or in pain, mostly in the beginning people feel a lot of pain. If and when you feel pain or aching or so on, we have to remind ourselves that it's just a sensation. We have to change the way we look at it so that this disliking is really not necessary. Our aversion to the experience is very difficult to understand. And only when you repeatedly put this into practice that you can finally come to see that actually that there's nothing wrong with the pain at all. But the method that we use is to remind ourselves, not saying this is bad or this is a problem or I have to this, I have to that. We just remind ourselves this is pain. So we say to ourselves, pain, 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 pain. Reminding ourselves again and again, hey, this is just pain. And the mind will slowly begin to accept that that's what this is. This is pain. Aching, aching or something. Actually keep the mind with the sensation. Keep it there until it goes away. The breath isn't special. It's not that we have to stay with the breath as much as possible. When there's something else, focus on that. When there's nothing else, come back again to the breath. If you feel happy, focus on the happiness. Because on the other hand, it's very easy to get attached to happiness or to calm. And when you're attached to it, well, then eventually it goes away and you're looking for it again. And eventually you can only sit when you feel this peace and happiness, and you become very disappointed when your meditation doesn't bring you these states. So it's an addiction. It's a partiality. It's a not being able to accept all of reality. So when we look at it and say happy, happy, or calm, calm, we come to let it go as well and realize that as long as our happiness and calm is dependent on certain states, we'll never truly be happy or at peace. Or as long as you have these feelings, you can focus on them, and when they're gone, come back again to the rising and the falling. If the stomach isn't clear, if the rising motion of the stomach isn't clear, it's only because you haven't done this before. You can put your hand there. Put a hand on your stomach. When you do this at home, you can try lying on your back in the beginning. It will help you get a sense of the motion of the rising and the falling. And we're not trying to force or control the breath, we're just trying to be aware of it, however it occurs. This is the second in regards to the feelings. The third foundation is the mind. And you'll find that actually this is in some cases even more difficult to contain, more difficult to deal with, more of an issue than the pain in some cases. In the beginning, it can be difficult to catch the mind. You shouldn't feel discouraged by this. If you continue to practice and do it again and again, and mostly rely on patience, you find that eventually you're able to come to terms with the workings of the mind, and you're able to be aware of the thoughts as they arise. Sometimes you can even catch them when they first arise. So again, we're not trying to stop the mind from thinking, just as we're not trying to stop the body from breathing. It's the nature of the mind to think, just as it's the nature of the body to breathe. So when there is thinking, just be aware of the fact that you're thinking and try to keep it at just thinking instead of judging or wanting it to be some other way or so on. Remind yourself, this is thinking. And say to yourself, thinking, thinking, thinking. In a way, this one is easy because it doesn't last. As soon as you say thinking, the old thinking is gone right away. Sometimes, in fact, you can't even say thinking, you just know that it's gone. You know that you were thinking, in which case you can become aware of the state of knowing. Say to yourself, knowing, knowing. And then come back again to the rising and falling. This will allow you to keep it just at thinking. So that whenever you think, it's only thinking. Just as the Buddha said, citta cittamattang bhavisati. When you think, this is only thinking. And the fourth is, as I said, the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha. So eventually it will become necessary for you to learn all about many of the teachings of the Buddha. But we should really go in order when we study the Buddha's teaching. We shouldn't just dive in and start reading many different things. Not unless we've done some pretty serious meditation already. When you begin to start meditating, you should focus only on those teachings that are appropriate for you at that stage. And this is best given in the form of one-on-one teachings from a teacher. But in general, we need the basics are first the four foundations of mindfulness. This is actually a Dhamma of sorts. But the second thing that we need is, as I said, the hindrances. And eventually there will be more and more. And if you read the sutta, you can see what are the other things that are most important. But the niwarana are very important in the beginning. And hopefully you can see that a little bit right now, that actually many of these may arise. Liking or wanting, disliking or frustration or upset or sadness. Be drowsiness or tired, fatigue in the mind or body, distraction where your mind is not focused, and doubt where you're not sure, you doubt yourself or you doubt what you doubt the practice, or so on. So when these come up, it's important that we're mindful and aware of them, so that we can come to see through them and realize that they're only a misunderstanding. They're based on improper attention, a misunderstanding of the way things are. Once we see the way things are in regards to these emotions or mind states, we'll be able to give them up. So when there's liking, just say to yourself, liking, liking, and just look at it and see it for what it is. This is liking. If you have disliking, say disliking, disliking. If you feel drowsy or tired, say drowsy, drowsy, or tired, tired. If you feel distracted, say to yourself, distracted, distracted, or worried, worried. If you have doubt or confusion, say doubting, doubting, or confused, confused, or so on. We're not judging these, we're trying to give up the judging involved with them. So when you see them, just see them for what they are. This is this, this is that. Doesn't make me an evil person because I have these inside. But there's no good that comes from these. And if you look closely, you'll be able to see that. Once they're gone, come back again to the rising and the falling of the stomach as normal. So now we'll go for another 10 minutes, and I won't do any talking. You can try to put these four into practice intensively for the next 10 minutes. Okay, and that ends our meditation for today. Before we finish, we can take a moment to send our good thoughts to other beings, send metta, send loving kindness, and make any wishes or aspirations that we might like to make. Just for a moment, we can take the time to do that, and then finish off.